This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
2 years ago, the BC government and the Union of British Columbia Municipalities initiated community poverty reduction pilot projects in 7 British Columbian communities. The projects were designed to decrease poverty by addressing unique needs in local situations. But as a 2-year progress report is issued, advocates say that the poverty has not been reduced by the projects, and promises made by the government have been largely unfulfilled. We're joined on the phone by Adrienne Montani, who is Provincial Coordinator of the First Call BC Child and Youth Advocacy Coalition, and a member of the BC Poverty Reduction Coalition.
Welcome back to People First Radio, Adrienne.
Thank you.
Tell us a bit about these community poverty reduction pilot projects. Where did they occur? And secondly, what were the hopes and promises when they started?
Well, they were 7 communities of various sizes and across the province were chosen. So they were Stewart up on the northern Vancouver Island, Port Hardy, Cranbrook, Kamloops, Prince George, New Westminster, and Surrey, the 7 pilot communities. And the it was understood that this was a micro approach to addressing poverty by targeting individual families and giving them sort of direct personal support to connect them to existing services. But that was a promise, one that this would be scaled up after the learning from the 7 pilot communities, which started in 2012. And then so that another 20 communities would be added within another year and scaled up even beyond that. And that the learning, as they worked with each of these families, would affect policy or would inform and drive wider social and policy changes to look at meeting the needs of vulnerable people.
What actually happened over the past 2 years?
Well, what actually happened was that the Ministry for Children and Family Development assigned a 0.5, so a half-time person, to each of the communities as a consultant. They did go out and recruit families. There was some discontinuity over those 2 years, so sometimes the person in the position left and they had to recruit a new person. There was not some of the other promises that there would be a provincial board of senior civil servants, at least, or cabinet members who would be learning from this so that they could look at whether provincial policy needed to change, didn't happen. So there was no upper-level buy-in, I would say. But at the local level, there were these 7 part-time consultants who went out and met with families, and they did their best to do good work, to connect them to food banks, to help them write an application to get on BC Housing List, to connect with whatever services were in their communities and to help them write a resume, those kinds of things. If this was a poverty reduction strategy, did those families, one, there were very few families overall, about 72 altogether in all 7 communities, who were touched by this project over the 2 years, and they didn't, there's no evidence in the report that they actually left poverty.
Tell us a little bit more about this rationale for the micro approach that the government of British Columbia talks about. Give us a description of that micro approach and what is the rationale behind it?
This was, I think, the ideological part of the approach. When the minister announced this back in 2002, it was one size doesn't fit all. So we have to go out and find out what the individual needs or what poverty looks like in these each community or for each family. And that's just flying in the face of a lot of research evidence that we know that there are certain barriers to getting out of poverty for lots of people. One, if you're working poor, low wages is a barrier to lifting yourself out of poverty if you're already working and you don't make enough. So the issue of the minimum wage staying up and the and living employers, including government, paying living wages comes up, obviously, as a one-size-fits-all thing. The other things are, like, for families on income assistance, welfare rates are extremely low, below the poverty line, and so that is another systemic one-size-fits-all thing that is now applied to people and would need to change to make their lives more livable, especially if they're on disability or in a category with young children and they cannot work because they can't get child care, for instance. That's another one-size-fits-all solution if child care were affordable. So those are the kinds of policy issues we think the government's avoiding talking about by repeating this ideology of, well, it's going to look different. And we were very disappointed in this report and the press release that accompanied it to see them say, see, we were right. These are not one size doesn't fit all because, hunger came up as an issue in Stewart, but not in Kamloops. And I know that's not true. If you read through the report carefully, you can see that some of those same issues, hunger, housing problems, just low income, come up, child care, come up across all the communities. So trying to cherry pick and say, well, see, we were right, this is it's different in different communities, is really disingenuous.
You write that child and family poverty rates have been higher in British Columbia than the national average since 1999. Give us a brief reminder as to what BC is facing in terms of poverty reduction.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have the highest child poverty rate in the country. About 1 in 5 children are poor, according to our last poverty report card. And we've been the worst. We've been above the national average since 1999. And especially for female lone parent families have a really high rate of child poverty, or children living in those families do. So it's like 1 in 2, almost half of children in this province living with female lone parents are poor. So these are staggering numbers, and we need government to pay attention to that. It's a crisis for a lot of families. We need some big answers, not individual by individual, because they are systemic issues that cause these. You know, low wage economy, major challenges around childcare, unaffordable housing, food insecurity. These are big issues that are not up to individual families to solve, but need some government has power to do something about this.
I took a look at the progress report that is focused on the accomplishments of this 2-year group of pilot projects, and you also drew attention to one particular sentence, and this takes us back to the whole notion of philosophy or belief systems, you might say. Quoting from the report, which you quote in your article, with more than 1 million jobs expected in the next decade, it's important that our work to alleviate poverty does not reduce incentives for self-sufficiency. Mm-hmm. Now, this whole concept of self-sufficiency is an enormous one. Is this what has been preventing progress over the last decade or more?
I think it's one of the ideological barriers. So it's trying to divide low-income families into deserving poor and those who deserve help and those that don't. And this idea that unless people are suffering, they won't want to work, which is just not supported by research at all. It's very difficult to be poor, and nobody wants to be there. And so it's not like people are unmotivated. They're looking for solutions. They're doing their best, but they're trapped very often by public policy. Failure to support affordable child care, by making failure to support affordable housing, by welfare rates that put you so low that you're spending your time standing in line at food banks and not getting good nutrition. So those kinds of things are big barriers, and assuming or I was very disturbed by that statement that we don't even want to alleviate poverty enough because it might undermine incentives for self-sufficiency. That's very insulting to low-income people.
The government offers a long list of its activities over the years that they have determined address poverty in the province. Has the province made some progress or done something good around this in the last numbers of years?
Well, they did eventually raise the minimum wage. That was a good thing. We just want to see it indexed now and have it benchmarked to something at least like the poverty line and have it so that it doesn't fall behind again. They've not moved on welfare rates significantly at all, so that's a huge gap. They have not moved on child care. They've just left it up to parents to navigate the marketplace of child care, which is extremely expensive, so they haven't moved on that. So I'd say very little progress in recognizing the role that government can play, they need to pay attention as they're talking about raising millions of jobs that are going to come down the pike or whatever, that we have been creating a very polarized economy with a lot of low-wage jobs. So you've got a lot of parents who are working full-time, full year even, and they're still making poverty level or below poverty level wages. So we do need to look at where the income supports are for those families who are working as many hours as they already can. And government has a role to look at what kind of jobs they're supporting, whether it's through their own contracting out or whether it's through the industries they support.
Adrian, what's next for this community poverty reduction pilot project? Are they finished? Will they resume again in any shape or form? What's happening with them now?
What we've been told is that they will continue in those 7 communities, but there's no intention at this time to assign resources for families in other communities. there's some promise that, again, what they're learning from the on-the-ground experience with these families is going to go up the chain of command somehow. But it's been 2 years and we haven't seen that happen yet, so I'm not holding my breath on that one. I would say that the work that's being done at the local level is what I would call Social Work 101. It's what should be happening in communities. It shouldn't just be 7 communities where families, you know, get some help getting on a list or finding their way to the food bank if they're having trouble doing that. But the big issues that would move a lot of people out of poverty are not going to be addressed by this kind of a project. They need to listen to what the families are saying, which they've already said. The big issues are childcare, housing, food security, and welfare rates, and move on those things. I think this is... It can be almost seen as busy work, even though it helps individual families. We're happy to see that happen. But at the government's just shirking its responsibility on the big policy issues.
Adrienne, is there anything else you'd like to add in this last moment or so?
Well, just that there is a what we're looking for from government that would include looking at all those policy issues I've been mentioning is a concerted effort bigger than this, a macro as opposed to a micro approach, and that's the Poverty Reduction Act and Social Inclusion Act that has been introduced twice now into the legislature, most recently by MLA Michelle Mungall. So there's and we'd really like to see this issue rise above partisanship and see government say, yes, we need to make a plan. We need to engage across government ministries with some solutions and hold ourselves accountable through, and that's what this act would do if it were passed. So we're trying to encourage government to adopt that bill or a bill like that that would say, yes, we will hold ourselves, we'll report out every year, here's what we're doing to reduce poverty in this province.
Adrienne Montani, thank you very much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Adrienne Montani is a provincial coordinator of First Call BC Child and Youth Advocacy Coalition and a member of the BC Poverty Reduction Coalition. For more information, go online to firstcallbc.org.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with the Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.